I'm Lana. With me is a swan of Tuonela, or in Finland she's known as Tina. You might have seen her YouTube channel where she comments on political and social issues impacting Finland. We'll talk about current year politics in Finland, how all the media is Marxist, rape statistics after the influx of invaders, and ridiculous hate speech laws aimed at silencing nationalists. In fact, her boyfriend is under investigation. Later on, she shares her thoughts on the American alt-right, and I ask her about the relationship between Finns and Russians. This was a filmed interview. If you'd like to watch, head over to the extra section if you're a member, our YouTube channel, or redice.tv in the TV section. Swan of Tuonela, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So where does the name, the Swan of Tuonela, come from?
Well, the Swan of Tuonela, it's of course a mythical creature from the Finnish mythology of Kalevala. And it's the swan that swims in the river in the underworld, in the land of the dead. And I've just always been into this mythology. And the swan, it's just such a fascinating creature because there's not much background information on the swan. Like, you don't know whether it's dead, whether it's immortal. It just is there. And why is there only one of these ones? Like, it raises a lot of questions, and it's still a very central character in there. So I just think it's a nice character, and there's some sort of a cool symbolism when it comes to this just quiet swan swimming in the river of the dead and seeing times pass by, seeing everything that happens in the world.
Yeah, so there's actually a song based on the Kalevala epic of Finnish mythology, and I just learned about it yesterday when I was researching for the show, so it's new to me. So what can you tell us about Finnish mythology? I don't know anything about it.
Well, the Finnish mythology is pretty different from most stories, because most stories include these heroes and gods, and they have a lot of supernatural and very grandiose elements, but in the Finnish mythology, it's not the swordsmen and or the gods who are the heroes, but it's like people like poets or blacksmiths who end up doing the great deeds. So it's just less grandiose and more humble.
Yeah, it's more of a folk culture, not as much about the gods, but maybe the folk ways of the common people, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Yes, and of course it's pretty diverse because it wasn't written by a single person, or it's not a single book, but a collection of poems from a certain area and certain time period. So there's a lot of different stuff in there.
Now, do a lot of Finnish nationalists pay attention to mythology? I mean, they know about the Swan of Tuonela, right?
Yes, of course. Everybody knows it instantly. And I see some symbolism from Finnish mythology and Finnish history used, but it's not that often referred to. Like, I don't know, maybe it just hasn't caught on, or maybe people think it's somehow stereotypical to use these symbols, because I don't know, maybe they are afraid of it being connected to, or people would connect it somehow to Nazis who use these mythical symbols from their own mythologies. And I don't know, maybe it's like that.
Yeah, it's funny because these things are so old, and then people think, oh, just the Nazis used to pay attention to this kind of stuff. It's just ridiculous. Well, thinking in terms of today, you know, I wanted to know, what was it like growing up in Finland politically? I mean, you're a nationalist today, but what was it like growing up for you?
When I grew up, I really didn't think about politics, and I really didn't have to, because I lived in the countryside, and there you don't really get to see these current phenomena, that it's life is always very calm there. It stays pretty similar. And for example, immigration doesn't really touch the countryside. So you can stay politically very neutral there, because these things, they don't affect your own life. And I was pretty left-wing for most of my life. And only when this migrant crisis started, then I started to get into politics more. And I came to realize that we are completely being lied to about the nature of this migrant crisis, that we are being promised Syrian children, and we are basically getting Iraqi grown men and Afghani men who have nothing to do with Syria. And I don't know, I just got angry about this. And then a year ago, I started my blog in Finnish. And that was then followed by the YouTube channel. And I don't know, I slowly became a part of the nationalist scene then over here.
Now, what is the nationalist movement like in Finland? Is it pretty big?
Well, there are lots of immigration critical people. Like, the, according to polls, something like 3 out of 4 Finns want less immigration. But it's not organized. And the problem is that there's too much division, that there are these small groups that all compete with each other. And they just can't seem to cooperate. But there is the True Finns Party, which has succeeded very well. Like, it grew from a very small party to a government party in just a few years. So it was a big success. And there are a few organizations like Suomen Sisu who are well organized and like have a clearly nationalist agenda. But mostly the scene is just pretty divided. And that's something we really need to fix. And there's something we need to learn from the left, that these leftists can pull these huge demonstrations. They can work together even though they don't agree about everything. And that's something we need to learn, that even though we don't agree about every small thing, we need to work together.
Oh, I agree 100%. 100%. Now, does the left try and shame right-wingers in Finland too? I know they do that in Sweden. They try and go after them and shame them and ice them out of society and get them fired. Does that happen in Finland too?
Of course, all the time. Like, they try to pick dirt from people's past. And they even use this guilt by association. Like, there's this councilwoman Terhi Kiemonki, who is now being shamed for being a member in a large Facebook group in which some other people wrote nasty stuff and racist stuff. And she didn't participate in it. She didn't write any of it, but she's now being blamed, like, she's guilty by association by just being member in this group, even though she didn't do anything. So they use everything. Everything they can get against you, they will use against you.
So what is the media like in Finland? Is it like Sweden, where it's pretty homogenous? It's all very leftist in Sweden. Is it the same in Finland?
It's completely like that. That there is no right-wing media over here. There are no right-wing newspapers. It's all the same, and they all publish the same stories, even with the same exact headlines all the time. So there's no difference between these mainstream media newspapers and TV news. They are all the same. And when there are these alternative media outlets, like online news, they are instantly smeared as fake news, even though there's no proof that there are fake news. So they have this very homogenous clique of mainstream media, and they attack all outsiders who aren't a part of that and who go against their agenda and who expose their lies.
Yeah, and they go to great lengths to try and shut those people down. I know in Sweden, they'll actually show up at some of these people's doors that have alternative media sites with cameras in their face, you know, publishing their address and trying to have people go there and basically attack them.
Yes, and here they even use the public news network for that. That there's this one female reporter in the public news network called Johanna Pehko, who calls herself a fact checker. And her job is basically to pick up all new alternative media outlets and smear them as fake news, even though she can't find any evidence.
Well, we know they're actually fake news. And I wanted to play a clip that you told me about this fake Syrian family. So let's watch this and then you can tell us about it.
Sure.
Hello. Welcome to Tampere.
Kiitoksia.
All right, so what's happening in this clip?
So the public news network, they had a so-called Syrian family in a talk show, and they claimed that there was a mom, a dad, and their daughter. But when the reporter was leading the daughter of the family out of the stage, she asked her, "Where is your mom?" And she had her microphone still on, so you could hear it clearly.
Oh,
that
geez.
She asked, "Where is your mom?" And so why does she ask that? Isn't the mom supposed to be the woman behind them? So clearly they weren't a real family and they made a major blunder by leaving the microphone on.
And this isn't the first time that this has happened. They fake this all the time, these so-called Syrian families and these kids that are used for photo ops. And Trump actually made a comment about that the other day. He was talking about, we know there's a travel ban right now and lefties are trying to show these poor kids that can't get in. And he actually made a comment about these fake Syrian families and photo ops. I thought was interesting. But yeah, this lady looks really old too. I mean, that's supposed to be the mom of this girl right here. She looks like a grandma.
Exactly. Like, this is completely unbelievable. And this is what they do all the time. And most of the time, it's not this obvious. Like, most of the time, they just pick real Iraqi people or real Syrian people, but they twist their stories. Like, they leave stuff out of there and they create these wonderful soap stories that are supposed to touch your heart and get you all immigration positive.
Well, it doesn't work on me, and I know it doesn't work on you. Jeez. Well, speaking of immigration, another thing that's become a problem in Finland is rape. So tell us about the rape statistics in Finland. What's going on up there?
Yeah, so rape, of course, it happens among native Finns too.
Sure.
But these recent migrants, they have really caused sexual offenses to basically explode. Of course, during 2015, we got these 32,000 migrants, mostly Iraqi and Afghani, some Somali, some Syrian. And just during that year, the sexual harassment cases doubled. And then during the next year, rapes went up by 64%, and the sexual harassment cases tripled again.
Jeez.
So they grew sixfold in 2 years. And rapes by foreigners have over doubled in that time period. And there are now 400 more sexual assaults by foreigners were this year than there were the year before. And this just keeps growing. And the newspapers are trying to make it seem as if it's not that bad. They create these stories that are supposed to create a false sense of security, like this police report about the street safety index. The police published a report in which they claimed that the streets of Finland are now safer than they have been ever in 10 years. And the way they got to that reasoning was by leaving out sex offenses altogether. They only counted in assaults, robberies, and DIUs as street offenses.
Wow.
They left out sexual harassment and rape altogether, because if they had counted those in, it would have been a completely different deal.
I wonder who told them to do that, because probably if you talk to your common police, they probably want to expose that, but someone above them is probably saying, don't include that. I don't know. Is the police pretty left there? Do you know any police in Finland? What are they like?
Well, the normal policemen, the patrol officers, they of course are like normal people. They have to deal with these issues. So of course they don't want this to happen, because they are the ones who have to go into the asylum seeker housing centers to sort out these fights. They have to put their own lives in danger with these people. But of course the police is working under the Secretary of State, and they have very clear multiculturalist agenda, so they can affect the leadership in the police force like that. And that way they can manufacture these reports and numbers they like.
Now, how are women in Finland responding to rapes? I mean, do you have more traditional women like you that are being loud about it? Of course, we know that the feminists, they just don't say anything at all. So how are women responding?
Well, that's a problem on its own. Like, there is no women's response. There are certain women like me who speak up about it, but there is no major outrage from women. And there should be, of course, demonstrations by women against this, because women are the one who are affected by this. But I just don't see it happening. And I think it's in the Finnish nature. Like, Finnish people aren't the type to go out on the streets and demonstrate. They don't like to make fuss about themselves. They don't want to be a nuisance. So they just sit quietly. Of course, they see everything unfold. They realize that it's a problem. They may change their own habits so that they wouldn't be victimized. But they aren't loud about it. And that's a part of the problem.
Yeah, I wonder, what's it going to take for people to start getting loud? I know, you know, that's a thing in the Nordic countries. They're more reserved. It takes a lot for them to finally snap and be loud. But what's it going to take? You know, what's it going to take?
I've been wondering the same thing. Like, when you look at the situation in Sweden, which is so much worse than it's over here in Finland, you would think that at some point people would have stood up and resisted against it. But for some reason, it didn't happen. And now it's become the new normal for people. So people are, in a way, used to it. And there are even this new generation of people to whom this is all they know. They have never lived in a different Sweden. They don't remember the safe Sweden they used to have. So people, this is being normalized and people grow numb to it.
I noticed some of the groups that are loud, though, are groups that are, you know, LGBTQ. And there's one that you were telling me about in Finland called Sita. Tell us about this one, Seta. Look at that lovely picture here. Jeez. Tell us about this organization.
Okay, so this is an organization for sexual equality. So they are for LGBT rights. And this is what you would call the gay agenda, because they aren't just for making legal changes to get everyone to have the same basic rights, but they are out to brainwash people. And the way they do it is, of course, by influencing young people. And recently they have made this program in which they demand that in school curriculums, LGBT positive information is included in all school subjects. That, for example, there can be a math task which includes a gay couple mentioned. So they want to normalize homosexuality and transsexuality to children. And I think especially normalizing transsexuality is a very dangerous road to take.
Oh, geez. Now, do they have problems saying girl and boy in class too, like Sweden?
Yes, that's another thing. And that doesn't even come from SETA. It comes from our own education ministry. They created these guidelines last autumn. And these guidelines said that teachers shouldn't unnecessarily call students girls or boys, but they should only use their names or some other group that isn't gender specific, but not girls or boys.
I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, are people really putting up with this? I mean, biological sex it's a reality. You can look and you can see what you have, right? It exists in nature. It's natural. What is the problem? I mean, this is just a mental sickness to be even thinking like this.
Yes, it's just crippling children's identity. They aren't supposed to have any sort of identity. And of course, the very core of every human's identity, to which their entire life is built on, are their biological traits, like race or biological sex. And if you prevent people from developing their identity in those issues, how can they grow up into full human beings? Like, how can they have full lives and normal personalities and normal lives if they don't have a core identity?
Yeah, I think nowadays too, they're really trying to push out, it's actually cool to be gay or transsexual or swinging in every way possible. You'll be more popular and liked, and that's what they want. They want more attention, a lot of these young kids, so they go for it, but it's not even sincere.
Yes, and that's what bothers me, especially about the trans agenda, that they lie to kids, that they make it out to seem as if living as a transsexual is the same thing as living as cissexual or accepting your biological sex. When they don't tell these children about the hormones, about the drastic surgical procedures and what they include, they don't tell about the nasty stuff. They just make it out to be, okay, it's a completely similar life choice as to accepting your own gender.
Yeah, and then, of course, nobody ever wants to talk about all the estrogen-mimicking chemicals that are in all the products that a lot of these pregnant women are using, and it's affecting their chemistry while they're pregnant and actually feminizing children in the womb. I mean, this is a huge problem. Thankfully, more people are starting to talk about it, but very few, very few. Now, tell us about hate speech laws in Finland. What's going on there?
Well, there are two laws that are basically called hate speech laws, and those are the law against agitation against a minority, which basically means that you say something that can be considered offensive or threatening against some minority, mostly Muslims, of course. And the second one is the breaching of religious peace, which basically is a blasphemy law, that if you insult or offend something that's holy to some religious minority, then you can be found guilty of breaching of religious peace.
Well, speaking of minorities, just thinking of Nigeria, for instance. Nigeria has, 175 million people. Somali has millions of people, right? Finland has 5 million people. So who's the minority here? When I think of Finnish folklore and mythology, I mean, that's a minority religion that should be protected, right?
Of course. And as you said, we are a country of 5 million people. And yet we are often put on trial for somehow offending a minority of 1.6 billion people.
I mean, all those African countries are huge populations, so don't even try and say they're minorities. That really ticks me off. So also, there was an example you had, I think it was a bisexual student and activist in the True Finns Party. What happened with him?
Yes, it was Sebastian Tynkkynen, and he's from the True Finns Party, from the youth organization. And he was on trial for both of these offenses, for agitation against the minority and breaching of religious peace. And there were some pretty interesting details about his case, such as the charge about breaching of religious peace. It was completely based on one sentence in which he said that Muhammad is a pedophile prophet and that Allah is a monster.
Yeah.
So in Finland, you cannot say that a person who has sex with a 9-year-old is a pedophile.
Oh, jeez. Oh, brother. Yeah, well, we should be saying it. Should be saying it louder, and more people should be saying it. Now, your boyfriend's also under police investigation, correct?
Yes, and it's just unbelievable. These cases, they get more absurd all the time. Like, he's now under investigation for subtitling the wrong video. He subtitled this demonstration speech by a French guy called Michel Polar, and now he's under police investigation for agitation against the minority. So he didn't film this speech, he didn't make this speech, he just subtitled it and uploaded it to Facebook, and now he's under investigation.
Well, of course, we have to play the video then.
Sure.
Especially to you, migrants and Muslims, I know you. I am not like most of the Finns. I lived in your country for 10 years and I've seen how cruel, arrogant and stupid you are. You have not created anything. You have not done anything. You have absolutely done nothing. You just a sick, cruel. You don't respect your women. You force them to be your slaves. You don't respect other religion. You don't respect the Christianity. I've seen it disappear for 10 years. I've seen you murdering the Christians. And if you don't like that, the truth. You are supposed to be tolerant according to your imams, but you're not tolerant. Have you seen a church in Saudi Arabia? Have you seen a Christian in Saudi Arabia who can have his faith? You want us to celebrate your holidays. Do you celebrate Christmas? Do you celebrate Easter? You are absolutely out of this world. You should not even exist. And you should be banned from any civilized society. But don't despair. One day we will kick you out, all of you, the young ones. You left your country collapsed. You did not even fight. You have no guts. You did not set to fight for your country, for your people, for your families, for your children. You just run away. But be sure one day most of the Europe will rise against you. You tried before to conquer it with weapons by wars, but we will defeat you because you are not worth it. And I ask one thing. Finnish people, rise up. Do not let the Islamization grow. Just stand up. Be men. You have proved it before and prove it again. Now fight for your freedom. Join us. Raise your hand and Swami Anzin.
One day we will kick you all out of Europe, and I sure hope so. Now, this guy is French, correct?
Yes, he is. And he lives over here in Finland because he has a Finnish wife, and he used to work in the foreign ministry over here. And he's a vet of the Algerian war. He has lived in this country for long times, so he knows his shit. Like, he knows how these people are, and he has seen what kind of effect these people have on different countries. So he just speaks out of experience.
Yeah, and he's right to say, you know, they're going to lose because, well, for one reason, they're not wealthy. And it's true. A lot of these people are parasites that actually need us to survive without us feeding them and clothing them and providing them shelter and heat. What would happen, right?
Yeah, like who is going to take care of these people in Sweden when there are too many of them? Like, for example, the city of Malmö, it now even has to raise taxes on its own citizens. It has to take in a lot of government support. So what happens when all towns are like Malmö, when all of them live above their income, you spend more money? So who's going to pay for all that? It's just going to collapse.
Yeah, of course. And there were whites that were screaming against him in the crowd, too. That's what's so amazing. Finnish people that are actually screaming against this guy. I mean, are there Finns actually defending Islam in Finland?
Yes, in masses. And especially because this was shot in Helsinki, and the city areas in the south, they especially are very green-red, that most people over there support the Green Party or the left-wing parties. So the support for this multiculturalism is just huge over there. But if you go to the countryside or over here in the north, the mood just shifts. Like, people are much more conservative, much more right-wing over here. But it's really alarming that there are a lot of young people who are so brainwashed that they can at the same time call themselves feminists and at the same time promote multiculturalism and bringing in a medieval culture that is the number one oppressor of women worldwide.
Yeah, I know, it's mind-blowing. It's just how can they have that contradiction in their head? So do you think that we will get to a point, maybe not in our lifetime, but at some point where we will kick all these people, invaders, out of Europe? Do you think it's going to happen?
I certainly hope so. And of course, it needs some sort of a trigger. I don't think Finns or Swedes will just think it up to start resisting this and start fighting back. Something needs to happen, something big. So some sort of a trigger is needed, and I don't know what can it be, maybe a terror attack, maybe a big riot or something. But if something like that happened, I think it's really possible that people can wake up. But they really need leadership and organization, and that's what people are lacking over here in the north, that there isn't a way to organize for these people who are against multiculturalism and mass immigration.
Now, what do these same people think about their neighbors, Russia? People that are supporting multiculturalism, how do they look at Russia today in Finland?
They, of course, are very anti-Russia. And our media is very Russophobic, I could say, that they create all these scary images of Putin and Russia possibly invading when there really is little evidence that gives any reason to be afraid of them. And it's almost dangerous what they do, especially when the public news broadcasting with taxpayer money smears Russia, smears Putin, and they basically twist what's going on in Russia. And of course, the problem they have with Russia is that Putin is a leader who actually does what his people want him to do. He acts in their best interest. He doesn't let those people in who his people don't want in. And he creates projects his people want him to create. So that's the problem. Putin is a leader who does what his people want him to do, and that makes our leaders look bad. So they need to smear Putin at any cost.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know Russia, you know, Finland put up one hell of a fight with the Soviets that were trying to encroach and take over in Finland. I mean, it was pretty incredible what happened. But nowadays,
they're not communist. They're anti-globalist Russia. So what's the problem? It seems like some people still think they're Soviet. Some people think they're fascist. They can't make up their mind about Russia, but they're your neighbors. You're so close. What's the problem? Think of what it would be like if, you know, a lot of European countries teamed up with Russia. How good would that be? It's a massive country, the biggest population, lots of resources. I mean, come on.
And that's exactly how I feel. Like, I think European people should team up with Russia, especially in this fight against Islamization, because we are fighting a big enemy and we need big allies. And who's bigger than Russia over here? And I think largely the negative perception on Russia comes from the media, that especially with this Syria propaganda that's out to make Russians look like they are just bombing civilians out of fun, and all these other plain lies about them. So many people aren't into politics that they don't follow these things beyond the headlines. They see what the headlines say, but they don't really do research. They don't read international news or something like that. So they get left with the perception the mainstream media over here gives them, and that's very anti-Russia.
Jeez, yeah. Well, you guys got to start taking some trips over to Russia and connect with some of your fellow neighbors over there. I think that would be a good union. Now, I wanted to switch gears a little bit. You did a video on the alt-right, or why you're not the alt-right. So tell us about that. Tell us about your view of the American alt-right, maybe some pros and cons, things you like, things you don't like that you know about.
Yeah, so in this video, I explained that I don't like to categorize myself politically because I find ideologies pretty dangerous, that when people adhere to ideologies, they can easily become morally or intellectually blinded by that ideology, so that they start defending the ideology even when it's wrong, and they start thinking the ideology is the solution for every situation, that there are no faults in it. And the American alt-right, of course, it's really diverse, so it's hard to create a single definite opinion on it because there are so many different personalities.
Yes.
But I think there's lots of potential over there, especially in those people who aren't in either of the extremes. When the other extreme are the National Socialists, and the other extreme, these ultra-modern right-wingers like Milo Yiannopoulos, I don't think either of those ends is going to save the Western civilization. But those people in between, like people like basically your show, like Jared Taylor, like Richard Spencer, those are the possible future leaders. But they need support behind them. And the threat to my eye seems to be that the support might shift to the one extreme or the other, because media tends to tilt attention towards the extremes, towards the Milo Yiannopoulos types, or towards the Nazis, because they are the easily categorized ones, so they are easily chewed, and media can make easy headlines about them. But I think it's the people on the center, on the alt-right, who are the possible future leaders.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember that we don't want to just preach to the choir. And when you become very extreme, that's all you end up doing. You kind of stay out in the fringe, as opposed to casting a wider net and trying to bring in more people, you know. And in some ways, you have to tailor your message and think about it in a different way to be able to reach more people. But we've seen in the last year, even through, because of Milo, believe it or not, people, they've looked into some of these things deeper, and then they come and find people like us. So we've actually seen the last year, you know, a flood of people coming over from there and saying, oh, I thought Milo was kind of it, what he talked about. And then I, you know, fighting for Western civilization. And then I learned, no, we have to fight for white people because white people are Western civilization, right?
Yes, and nobody usually becomes alt-right or far-right at once. Most people start from the center or from the left, and they glide towards the right. They become more and more right-wing the more information they can find. So first they start thinking mass immigration is bad. Then they start realizing that, okay, we also have a demographic issue. And then they start realizing that, okay, it's the whites only who create Western civilization, so we need to keep these countries white to sustain this Western civilization. So it happens step by step. And I think we need to give people some time for that process. And that's why I'm strongly against attacking those who are less right-wing than you are, and calling them cucks and things like that, because those aren't necessarily bad people. They are just people who aren't as far in the process as you are.
That's right. We weren't.
They are still learning.
That's right. We weren't all born right wingers, right when we were born. That second, oh, I'm a nationalist. You know, I mean, that's just ridiculous. Everyone has a journey they've been on and a path, and they wake up in different times and in different ways. And you're absolutely right. We have to be patient and we have to be gentle with some of those people. Yeah, sometimes tough love is needed too, but we have to remember there's new people coming on all the time. That's why it's important, I think, too, to also maybe keep some things really simple. And then as they start wanting more, then they'll find some more of the extreme stuff as well.
Yes, that's exactly how it happens. And if I start thinking about myself, I started from the left. And if at that point people from the nationalist scene had started attacking me and smearing me and calling me names, I most likely wouldn't have wanted to join this scene. But because they were nice and welcoming, it felt more natural to move towards that nationalist scene. So it's important to stay open for those people who aren't yet at the point we are in.
Now, what do you think about the term white nationalist? I mean, you don't use that in Europe, because in Europe, you're just a nationalist, right? You're a Finnish nationalist, a Swedish nationalist, although that's probably changing now, because now if you're a nationalist in Europe, are they also calling you a white nationalist?
No, that's actually a word they don't use that much. They, if the left-wingers use it as a smear, they use much more the word Nazi. White nationalist is pretty rarely heard over here. And of course, there's a reason for that, because if you are in USA, there are loads of different white people. They aren't a homogeneous group, so you have to call them by that pretty broad definition, white. But if you are over here in Finland, we are 97% of us are people of Finnish descent. We are from the same gene pool, so there's no need to call us white because we are Finns. So yeah. If you're a nationalist over here, you are a nationalist. You don't have to specify white, because that's what we are.
Yeah, exactly. I know, it's so different there. But in America, it's just kind of become a generic white, because people have been here now for a while and kind of blended out. Very few people have basically retained their ethnic makeup. You know, it depends how late they came, I guess.
Yeah, and over here, it's so much easier to justify ethno-nationalism, because if you are in USA, all these left-wingers, they start asking questions like, well, do white people have a shared culture? Like, are these all white people part of the same group? And you have to answer these questions first. But if you are in Finland, these people are all the same race. They are all from the same gene pool. So it's easily justified that they make up the social threat or the fabric of our society, and that they share same genes, they share the same culture and values, because they are a very homogeneous group.
Yeah, and we want to keep it that way, right? We don't want to lose that. And I feel like what's happening with the European Union is they kind of want to make it like in America, right? Where there's no borders there, where everyone just kind of commingles and mix it up. And then it would be a shame to lose what's Finnish and what's Swedish and what's Russian, right? We don't want that to happen. We don't want it to be a generic white in Europe.
Yes, like what we have now is a real multicultural society. Like,
yeah.
We have a multicultural Europe. We have Italian culture, we have Icelandic culture, we have Swedish culture, we have German culture, French, all these. But if the EU leaders and the EU elite, they get their way, we just become this homogeneous mass with no borders and with no specific cultures, just this plain EU culture.
Well, that's why it's good that you're doing videos and speaking out about it. And I see that there's a lot more young women that are coming out and speaking about it, which is hopeful. They say that when a movement starts to get really serious, it attracts a lot of women. And I have seen that happen. So how do you think we can attract more women to nationalism in Europe specifically?
Well, I think female leaders are needed. Or not just leaders, but people who are visible in some way, like bloggers, so that other women can see that women are active in this scene. It's not just old guys or angry young men, but it's women too. And when you are a woman talking to other women, it's much easier to explain these issues. And women have easier time connecting with other women. So when it's another young woman explaining these hazards of mass immigration to you, or the importance of sustaining our own culture and demographics, they just are more accepting of the message. So what we need is females to speak up and then other women will follow.
It's true. I keep saying this, but women attract other women. It's simple as that. That's all it really takes. Now, tell us about your YouTube channel and your live streams and what you have going on.
Yes, so I have two YouTube channels, one which is in English and one in Finnish. And on my English channel, I usually do some live streams, but not that often. And over there, I mostly make something like 3 to 10 minute videos about immigration, feminism, and issues like that. And on my Finnish channel, I do more live streams, and I visit events like feminism talk nights and Social Democrat Party events, just to go see what's going on and ask questions. And we live stream or report from there. So we are the alternative media when it comes to that.
That's great. I think we need more of that. We need to infiltrate more of these leftist gatherings and events and go undercover and kind of leak things out and troll them, if you will. So I think that's very good. Well, keep up the work. And I want to thank you for being my guest today. It's a pleasure to connect with you.
Yes, thank you so much.
I agree with Tina in that nationalist groups in every nation need to put aside petty differences and unite and fight together for the big picture. We need the numbers. This isn't high school. This is an existential threat that impacts the very survival of our nations, of your tribe. It's why I continue doing this show, and we will continue for many years. Not sure I want to do this as an old granny, but we'll see about that. Thanks to Red Ice members who make this show possible. If you want to keep us going, sign up for a Red Ice membership at redicemembers.com. And although we offer most things for everyone, our members get more, including the second hour of Red Ice Radio hosted by Henrik, and Weekend Warrior, our live weekend TV show where we get a little more personal. Members can also chat with other members during the live show. RedIce.tv or RedIceMembers.com is where it all happens. Enjoy the rest of your week. See you soon.